Hi everyone, you're listening to Poetry, the Memoir of the Soul. I'm Barbara Lanehard, your host and poet in residence. Table set, come on in, join me. How about some tea or coffee? How have you been? Settle in for some poetry and prose. The sun is out, melting the snow. Spring will be upon us soon. Does it take its cue from Cupid? Spring, a fresh start, like a new love. It peaks from under a late snow, tucked into warmth until the equinox, refusing to wither. Don't be swayed by the hunched backs of daffodils in their repose in the snow. They grow deep, thirsty roots for blooms ready to startle. I just wrote this poem, I'll call it Cupid's Dream. My memoir today is about love and Valentine's Day. I call it Cupid Sings the Blues. The blues, really? Do I sound cynical? Bear with me as I explore Cupid's possible dismay with the state of affairs of love. I promise I will be hopeful, eventually. Certainly, Valentine's Day is a sweet day on which we affirm our love for family and friends. I have happy memories of making or buying cards, baking decorative cakes and cookies, gifting people with candy, flowers, mugs, and soft toys, and I looked forward to receiving the same. Who doesn't long for adoration and romance? Nice dinners out, wine, cuddling, being kissed, hugged, and told we are loved. It is beautiful. I'm grateful for loving gestures, and who isn't? Great poetry, lasting poems, speak not only to the divine beauty of love, but also to its vulnerability. This poem is by Ben Jonson, 1572 to 1637. A famous English playwright and poet, second most important English dramatist after William Shakespeare, says some sources. Jonson's poem is entitled Song to Celia. Drink to me only with thine eyes, and I will pledge with mine, or leave a kiss but in the cup, and I'll not look for wine. The thirst that from the soul doth rise doth ask a drink divine. But might I of Jove's nectar sup, I would not change for thine. I sent thee late a rosy wreath, not so much honoring thee as giving it a hope that there it could not withered be. But thou thereon didst only breathe and sent it back to me. Since when it grows and smells, I swear, not of itself, but thee. This classic love poem compares love to a divine nectar or wine shared with his love. Maybe he made eye contact with a woman from afar, and his gift of roses reveals his hope that she will return his lasting and passionate love. However, it sounds like she rebuffed his charming offer by returning the flowers. Nonetheless, he will hold on to the fragrance of her sweet breath on the flowers as a memory of her. Indeed, it is risky to share our love, to shout it out to the world. We can be rebuffed. After all, broken hearts are difficult to heal. Could this be one reason why Cupid sings the blues? Because of our vulnerability, we are taking the day of love, maybe too superficially. I have experienced people, myself included, putting aside differences for a display of tenderness on February 14th, only to go back to benign neglect the next day. What makes this one day so special? Why not work on the art of love every day? A fellow poet on WordPress wonders the same. Both he and his love believe their words of love are true for any day and not just sentiments for February 14th. River Vlogger writes, "A day like any other." With like minds, we scorn this greeting card holiday. Yet my mind still turns to you. A turn made every moment since the first turn on the path that brought our hearts together. Since the first words I wrote for you, words I would write on any day, even this, my un-Valentine's Day poem, he says. It takes courage to step out of the fold and question the source of things. Why do we have Valentine's Day anyway? Who do we have to blame for this greeting card holiday or big candy Christmas? According to Emily Temple in her article, you can blame Geoffrey Chaucer for Valentine's Day, published in Literary Hub on February 14, 2020. In his 14th century poem, The Parliament of Fowls, Chaucer described Valentine's Day as the day when birds come to mate choose their mates. Before Chaucer's poem, there is no indication of the practice of celebrating Valentine's Day. Likewise, and this is an aside, do we know the source of the image of Santa Claus? Where did he come from? The image of Santa Claus we see on Christmas cards stems from a poem and a visit from St. Nicholas, also known as 'Twas the Night Before Christmas by Clement Clark Moore in 1823, and art by caricaturist Thomas Nast. If anything, poets have surely played a role in co-creating holiday traditions. My poem, Cupid Sings the Blues, delves into my impressions of Valentine's Day, especially Cupid's sadness. Cupid Sings the Blues. It's February 14, the day of love. Roses, chocolate-covered strawberries, the size of the open palm, awaiting tributes to devotion. Heart-shaped praises and invitations, be mine, hashtag love, you are hot, hug me, say yes, my baby, crazy for you. Pink and white cupcakes at school, decorated with large red hearts, the heart, the seat of emotion, shaping balloons and decorating bags with tiny handmade cards from classmates and teachers. One girl can't help but notice her bag is half full, and the cute guy in the third row still doesn't know she exists. Guys at GURBS search Hallmark greetings for the perfect sentiments to match the lush bouquet, already a tad wilted, in the wait for the crystal vase. She expects a ring with dessert, finally, this year, possibly. Elvis is officiating a free mass wedding on this day at Adelphia Restaurant in Deptford, New Jersey, from 6 to 10 p.m. to all who are engaged or already married and want to renew their vows. What plays in Vegas these days doesn't stay in Vegas. On this day, families call a truce for taco night at Pancheros, where they scroll online while awaiting their food, and even the toddler holds a device throughout their St. Valentine's feast. Maybe they are Googling the history of Valentine's Day. St. Valentine, was he the Roman priest or was he a bishop from Terni? Which one was the patron saint of epilepsy? Which one cut hearts from parchment for soldiers and persecuted Christians to remind them of God's love. Which one married couples in secret so that the husband could avoid military service? Which one gave sight to his jailer's blind daughter, to whom he wrote, "From your Valentine"? Which one was tortured and beheaded in Rome on February 14, 269, because he would not renounce his faith? Whose skull is adorned with flowers in the Basilica of Santa Maria in Cosmedin in Rome, his relics on display for pilgrims in Dublin? Legends may offer us more than one Valentine in a treat bag, but only one Saint Valentine, a collage of the two or even three Valentines from that era. Now one Roman martyr to whom we trace our day for love. Our day for love, we put so much heart into it, our day of love, even though we know the gifts and sentiments cannot relieve our sense of disconnection, the duality of self and other. Even if we are surrounded by 100 brides and grooms in a ritual of courtly love blessed by Elvis, or the entire family at their feast of St. Valentine, or a classroom of celebrants consuming witty conversations, we feel deeply alone as we spiral among the orbit of souls, floating hearts that smack into our wall and bounce away from us, fluttering into the clouds, the feathers of dead doves caught in an updraft. And not even Cupid can aim his arrow to avoid piercing our eyes, blinding us. And not even the saint can get us to see. What is it the saint wants us to see? Although we honor our love for family and friends, we are still disconnected and lonely. Those we hope love us may not. The cute classmate in the third row. We go out for a Valentine feast and just stay on our phones, not even connecting with, "How is your day? How do you feel? I love you." We celebrate this day without understanding the history, the source of this convention. It's like Shirley Jackson's famous story, The Lottery. Every year, townspeople pick someone to stone to death, but no one knows why, and they cannot challenge the tradition. They can only hope that their name isn't drawn from the lottery. We pledge our sacred vows to an Elvis impersonator with the masses between courses at a restaurant in New Jersey. We are just orbiting around others in our lives, bouncing off each other and spinning into an oblivion of disconnection. Cupid is unable to aim his arrows at our spiraling souls, so we are blinded. We are the feathers of dead doves, the bird of love. Even Saint Valentine cannot get us to open our eyes and see the truth. While I was writing this podcast, it occurred to me how much Saint Valentine reminds me of Jesus Christ, also crucified by a Roman for defying Rome, by refusing to deny God, and for loving and healing others. Saint Valentine's skull is on display, crowned in flowers, among them roses. You can see the gruesome image online if you Google it. And Christ wore a crown of thorns on his way to the crucifixion. Roses and thorns. Do you see the connection? Red roses symbolize love, and their thorns represent the pain of love, in that love presents challenges, sacrifices, and loss. Also, passion is transitory, but love is lasting. Robert Burns is a famous romantic Scottish lyrical poet who lived from 1759 to 1796. He wrote A Red, Red Rose. In this poem, the word "lass" means young woman. Oh, my love is like a red, red rose that's newly sprung in June. Oh, my love is like the melody that's sweetly played in tune. So fair art thou, my bonnie lass, so deep in love am I, and I will love thee still, my dear, till all the seas go dry. Till all the seas go dry, my dear, and the rocks melt with the sun, I will love thee still, my dear, while the sands of life shall run. He states in the first two lines that love is passionate, symbolized by the color red, and a beautiful flower, a rose. The rose, especially the red one, symbolizes love for those reasons. However, roses have thorns, meaning this: if we do not handle love gently, we will experience pain and maybe loss. Also, like roses, which wilt away, the passion, the summer bounty, dies at some point. Burns states his love was born in June, the summer months. Perhaps he met his bonnie lass in June. Summer also represents heat, passion, the coming of age. The sun blazes down and brings more bounty, beauty, and abundance. And as crops grow, so do relationships such as theirs. Therefore, summer is the season of potential for their romance. His love is played in tune, so it feels right. The heavenly harmonics are aligned. Although his passion itself, the summer bounty, fades away like a wilted rose, his deep love doesn't. He will still love her until the end. When the seas are dried out, the rocks have melted, and time has stopped altogether. His poem sings about the depth and lasting power of his love. However, by repeating the word red in his description, a red, red rose, he highlights the passionate side of his love early on in the relationship. Love at first sight, that passionate stage of love, is transitory because roses do eventually die, but true love doesn't. What woman wouldn't love getting this poem from someone instead of this Valentine I found on Amazon.com by Top Hat and Monocle? Things I love: 1, naps; 2, socks; 3, you, in that order, it states. Are my brothers' favorite for their sisters. Roses are red, violets are blue, you look like a monkey and you act like one too. Or this one from Candy Kisses UK. With all my love to my girlfriend, sending loving kisses your way, from me to you on our special day. Maybe Cupid is sad because we make light of love with jokes and impersonal references. To my girlfriend on our special day, maybe a line should be provided for her name. And there is, again, that phrase, our special day. We can't get off our devices long enough to try writing our own poetry. It isn't easy to express our deepest emotions in a genuine and sincere manner. The blank page, the white space, is intimidating. The inner critic tells us we are no Robert Burns or Shakespeare. With that self-criticism, we don't find the words to proclaim our love. I say this because I have felt it before. Valentine's Day serves to make me feel woefully inadequate. I have been so unloving. It isn't easy to do that work, to love others who think you look and act like a monkey, or list you as a priority beneath socks. Yes, I know, we tease. Lighten up, Barbara. Seriously, though, holding the space of love is sacred work. In Letters to a Young Poet, Rilke writes, "To love is good, too, love being difficult. For one human being to love another, that is perhaps the most difficult of all our tasks, the ultimate, the last test and proof, the work for which all other work is but preparation. And he also writes, love consists of this, two solitudes that meet, protect, and greet each other. How can I love my family and friends better? Will they forgive me for my unloving acts? How can I express my deep love? How can I expand it to strangers in the world? Cupid's task is to strike us with that arrow, make us aware that we are here to love. Wake up, and to love deeply and unconditionally every present moment. To love fiercely, to put down those roots of love in rich soil for our summer bounty, which we harvest and preserve to carry us through winter to our old age. Every present moment, how can we be with love as opposed to being in love? But what is the use if we fail to examine the scope of our love, if we put blinders on? There are risks with love. This tender state of being can collapse. Then we have nothing left but grief and loss. Maybe if we ignore our emotions, the losses will not be so devastating. We hide behind our devices, our jobs, our addictions, all those things that can keep us isolated in a daze. Then one day we realize we have lost something special. Like I say in my poem, Somewhere Blindly. Somewhere blindly I misplaced you. Was I asleep in my tea? Was I meandering on a twisted forest path of past life contemplations? Was I hanging off a headline or falling off the edge of the internet, the dot in calm, mesmerized by pixels and bytes? Did I lapse you into a bed of forget-me-nots by the sea of forgetting on a beach of lost marbles? And what can come from grief and loss but anger and rage? Is this why we are in a daze, to shield us from grief, anger, and rage? Maybe Cupid's melees is our social melees. Do our violent outcries stem from our inability to express love and even to accept love? Cupid, is his purpose to ignite passion or to ignite love? Which is it? They're very different. Passion is the fire, love the embers. When we feel that spark of attraction to someone, it ignites passion, sexual attraction and intimacy that can deepen into love over time. The fire becomes embers. Passion is the heat that fuels the fire. It's exciting and pretty affirming to share that attraction with someone else. Your light even shines out to all around you. With passion, we are in love. But is that really love? I imagine true love as the coals, the embers. They keep burning after the flames cease. They are the base of the fire, the steady source of compassion itself, because I have found that to truly love someone, I need compassion. How can we be with this state of love? How can we tend to the embers until, as the poet Burns writes, they dry out every sea and melt every rock until time itself runs its course? Passion is more about physical intimacy, love, spiritual and emotional intimacy, bonding. Love is staying with someone's light and also their shadows, their pain, fear, and grief. However, not with abuse or violence, of course. For better and for worse doesn't mean we can trample on somebody. We love by standing with them in their pain, but we are not their pain. Love is kind and compassionate. Loving to me involves understanding each other, forgiving, learning to compromise, respecting, not taking things personally, being present to others' pain, listening, holding others in our heart. That is our work, to love fiercely, not just our family and friends, but ourselves and the world. And every day, not just on February 14, we grow our deep, thirsty roots, and with our blooming love, we prepare to startle. Thank you for listening. This is Poetry, the Memoir of the Soul with Barbara Lanehard, host, writer, producer. You can find my poetry on WordPress at extraordinarysunshineweaver.blog. I shared my poems, Cupid's Dream, Cupid Sings the Blues, and Somewhere Blindly. My gratitude to River Logger for his un-Valentine's Day poem entitled A Day Like Any Other. You can find other poems by him on his WordPress blog, riverlogger.com, riverlogr.com. I also read poems by Robert Burns and Ben Jonson. You can find more examples of their poetry on poetryfoundation.org. If you would like to contribute poetry to this podcast, you may submit your work to me in a Word document attached to an email at milosmom@gmail.com, meelosmom@gmail.com. On the subject line, indicate it is a submission to this podcast. I can fit it into a theme. In the email, include any pertinent information on yourself and publications you want me to promote, especially for the work submitted. Again, thank you everyone for joining me. Just leave your cup on the table. I'll take care of it. Know that you always have a friend here. I hope you stop by again for a visit next time on Poetry, the Memoir of the Soul. Remember that you too can write your own poetic memoir.